Welcome to the 308th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I am your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are a review of the Final Four and a look back at the NBA. So let's jump right in with a review of Final Four weekend action of the NCAA men's basketball tournament. We will start in the round of Final Four from Saturday, where Florida beat Auburn 79-73.
Yeah, Florida, made another comeback in this game. They did a great job of just playing in the second half. They've done that all tournament. Without spoiling too much, they were able to do it again. But obviously, as we all, I mean, not much of a spoiler. We all know that. But yeah, Florida, I think, had four different comebacks of 9 or more points, and this game was no different. Auburn kind of took the lead late in the first half after both teams were just kind of going back and forth, trading buckets, and they took a bigger lead at the end of the first half, but Florida was able to just come back immediately in the second half. They were down 46-38, but Auburn just could not stop Walter Clayton Jr. He had 34 points on 11 of 18 shooting in this game. Just a ridiculous performance from him. Auburn not doing a good job of shutting him down whatsoever. Did a good job of pretty much shutting everyone else down, but the problem was he had 34, like I said. They had just enough production from everybody else. Thomas Hauck had 12 points. Elijah Martin had 17 points on 6 of 10 shooting. So those two combining for 51 of Florida's 79 points and 6 of 11 from 3, while the rest of the team shot 2 of 10. But that was enough for the win. So Florida doing a good job of getting production from their stars. Auburn, on the other hand, didn't have a great shooting game at all. Todd Pettiford really was the guy who they needed to step up off the bench. He's been that spark all year long, but just couldn't get it going. On Saturday, 7 points on 1 of 6 shooting. Did have 4 assists, but, just not enough from him. Jani Broome, 15 points, 7 rebounds on 6 of 14 shooting. Not a dominant performance, not a terrible performance, but obviously for a player of the year runner-up, definitely not the performance he would want to go out with. Chad Baker-Mazzara was really the guy carrying the scoring load for Auburn, as he had 18 points on 4 of 7 from 3, 6 of 10 from the field. But like I said, no one else could really get it going. And Auburn was a, or Florida, excuse me, was able to beat Auburn. And then you had another comeback. And that was the theme of the weekend. Actually, all three teams that won were trailing at the final media timeout, which is an interesting wrinkle. But this one definitely was the biggest comeback of them all. Duke leading very, very late. They were leading 59-45 as late as 8 minutes left in the game. And Houston obviously stormed back to keep this game close, and then, got it down to 4. Duke extended it all the way back out to 64-55 lead with 2:15 left, and that's when you really thought it was over, because Houston had made their run to bring it within 4 but couldn't close the gap anymore. And then all of a sudden, Emmanuel Sharpe scored 4 straight points, made it a 5-point game, scored 2 more to counter 2 from Cooper Flagg, and it was a 6-point game eventually. Then he had a 3 to cut it to 3, and then Houston just, this was where Sion James turned the ball over on the inbounds, and Houston got the putback dunk to make it a 1-point game. And then obviously Duke misses the front end of a 1-and-1 foul on Cooper Flagg for over the back. Houston makes 2 free throws. Duke misses a shot. Cryer makes 2 free throws, ices the game. Really eerily similar to Houston's win against Kansas, which was probably the game of the season, if not one of the best games of the season, where Houston was down 6 with like 13 seconds left on the road at Kansas and ended up forcing that game to go into overtime and then eventually winning it in double overtime. So it felt exactly like that game. And that's kind of what Houston's done all year. If you lead them in the game close late, they're pretty much always going to win. Although that wasn't the case last night. Florida trailing at the half 31-28, but Florida again had been a second half team all tournament long, really, trailed against UConn, or were really close against UConn, against Texas Tech. They also trailed at the half, had that late comeback there as well. Walter Clayton definitely struggled in this game, only hit 1-3, only had 11 points. But Will Richard was the guy that got it going for Florida, hit some threes early, hit the first 3 of the game. I also think he hit the first and the second 3s of the game by either team, as this game started off some really, really cold shooting from beyond the arc. Houston getting basically all their offense from offensive rebounding. They had 15 of those on the night, but just couldn't, neither team could get it going from 3. Houston shot 6 of 25. Florida shot 6 of 24. But at the end of the game, it was Florida actually on the defensive end that really sealed it. Made a comeback, barely led at any point in this game. But they were able to mount a last minute comeback, make some free throws when it mattered the most. And Houston did not get a shot off in the final minute and 20 seconds. And despite only giving up two free throws or three free throws made, but two trips to the free throw line total, that was the end of Houston's season just because they literally did not get a shot off after LJ Cryer missed a shot with 1:25 left. It was turnover, 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 and then turnover at the end of the game, obviously by Emmanuel Sharpe. But again, Houston, like I just mentioned in the Duke game, they wouldn't have been in this game at all if it weren't for Sharpe's heroics in the final, in the original Final Four game, in the semifinal game. So can't put too much on him. He had a great season as well. And really all those guys at Houston that won't be moving on next year had a great, great season. And it'll be interesting to see how they reload next season, because I don't think they're a program that's going to lose much to the transfer portal, and definitely not going to bring in too much either. But kind of, you know, this is a very, very good team to kind of live in a little bit of an isolated roster situation, and also just have that talent carried over to next year with only a few of the seniors leaving.
You and I commented that three fantastic games in the Final Four. I actually said to somebody else, it may have been the best Final Four that I remember in terms of the quality of all three games, some of which you've touched on, despite last night's game being a little ugly in the beginning with, I think it was both teams going a combined 0 for 13 for their first 13 three-pointers. But nobody can complain about this Final Four. Fantastic. And as you and I mentioned, the tournament after the first couple rounds, when you've been saying it all year long, there's a major gap between the top of college basketball and the next tier, and then probably that tier and below. It was some fantastic basketball, probably the best final 2 weekends of the tournament that I remember, and I think certainly, at least as I remember, the best three games in the final 4 weekend that I ever recall. So really enjoyable tournament. Don't know if you have any other comments on it, Patrick. If not, we can just move on to the NBA.
Starting in the Eastern Conference, the Cleveland Cavaliers at 62-16 with only a few games left in the season. Of course, unless they lose out and the Celtics win out, they will be getting the one seed in the East, not getting home field overall, though, likely, and we'll get to that later. But the Celtics at 58-20 are just 4 games back with 4 games left in the season, likely to take on either the Magic or the Hawks, those two teams locked up in the 7 and 8 spot, although there are some contenders there. The play-in bracket is pretty close in the East, but we'll get there in a second. The Knicks at 50-28 are in third place. They are not able to get to the 2 seed, but they have a pretty solid cushion in terms of their lead for the 4 seed. They're up by 3 games on the Indiana Pacers, so pretty good chance that they keep that one locked up in their favor. And then you have the Pacers and the Bucks, who are sitting at the 4 and the 5 seed. The Pacers at 47-31, the Bucks at 44-34. The Pacers have been hot recently, 8-2 in their last 10. They've won 4 in a row. The Bucks have also won 4 in a row, but they're 6-4 in their last 10. And then finally, you have the Pistons, who are the last team in the playoffs in the East at 43-36. They are going to be the 6 seed or better. I don't. They cannot get to the 4 seed, but they can get to the 5 seed if the Bucks were to slip up at the end of the season. So the Pistons either sitting at the 6 seed playing the Knicks, or they're going to be the 5 seed, more likely than not playing the Pacers. But a great season by the Pistons to turn it around and get to this level. Then you have the Magic, who, you know, people thought last year they got a 5 seed, maybe had arrived a little bit early. They kind of had the same exact season this season, just a little bit worse and a little more injury riddled. And all of a sudden, they're in the play-in bracket, locked in there at 38-40. Currently, their matchup would be against the Atlanta Hawks, with the winner facing, of course, the Celtics in the first round. But there's a chance, obviously, that they could slip from there. They're only 1 game ahead of the Hawks, and they're only 2 games ahead of the Bulls, who are 36-42. They are 7-3 in their last 10. They've won 3 in a row. And finally, the Heat are the last team in the play-in bracket, a half a game back of the Bulls for what would be home court in that 9-10 game. And also only a game and a half back of the Hawks, 2.5 back of the Magic for the 8 seed and the 7 seed, respectively. So definitely a chance that the seeding could shake up there. But the East, in terms of the battle for different seeds, is pretty locked up to a few tiers. Obviously, you have the Cavs, then the Celtics. Very, very unlikely that the Celtics win out and the Cavs lose out and lose home field, but I guess it's second or home court, but I guess it's technically possible. The Knicks are kind of just locked in at 3 there. And then you have the Pacers, the Bucks, and the Pistons fighting it out for 4, 5, and 6, although I don't, again, the Pistons can actually get to the four seed, but they can be the five, and then the Pacers could fall below the Bucks, and the Bucks could be the four as well. And then the play-in bracket, like I said, locked in. Of course, that means the Raptors, the Nets, the Sixers, the Hornets, and the Wizards are all eliminated from playoff contention. That'll be an interesting thing to talk about because obviously you have a team like the Philadelphia 76ers with a lot of talent on the roster that also will have probably top five odds to get Cooper Flagg this year, which is just kind of ridiculous. But they have done a great job of tanking once their season was declared over with Joel Embiid going out for the season. And unfortunately, they could be rewarded again for the tank, which obviously they were rewarded with that in the past, although eventually they were also sanctioned for that. So, you know, a little bit of give both ways on that spectrum of tanking, but we'll see what happens with the Sixers. We'll see what their lottery odds do and where they end up. But in the West, it's a definitely, definitely much tighter battle. You have the Thunder, who have clinched the one seed in the West, 12 and a half games ahead of the Rockets. They're 64 and 14, so they are 2 games ahead of the Cavs if you're looking for overall home court. And with only, you know, 4 games left, is it likely that the Thunder lose 3 of those games? I don't really think so. So I don't think they're going to give the Cavs an opening to steal that from them, but it's technically possible. So have to leave it in there no matter what. I mean, this is going to be a 65 win season for the Thunder, which is just crazy. Just a great season from them. Very, very young team, but a very, very capable team. But the Rockets are in second at 52 and 27. They've won 3 in a row. They're 8 and 2 in their last 10, looking very, very good heading into the playoffs. And pretty much a lot, or they have locked up actually that 2 seed. So they will be playing one of the teams in the play-in. But I mean, based on who's in the play-in battle right now, I don't know if you want to play any of those teams. And we'll talk about that in just 1 second. But then you have the Lakers, who are actually with 2 wins in a row, including a win over the Thunder. They have kind of separated themselves from the rest of the pack because the next 5 teams from the fourth down all the way down to the 8th seed are only separated by a half of a game. And the Lakers are 1.5 games ahead of that bunch. They have to play the Thunder again, even though they just beat them, but they play them again on the road late, I think tonight actually. But we'll see what the Lakers can do to get a few wins at the end of the season and lock up this seeding. Obviously, if they get to 50 wins, all 5 of the teams that are seeded directly below them have 32 losses already on the season. And a few of those teams play each other. So if the Lakers can get 2 more wins, I'm pretty sure they would lock up being somewhere in the playoffs. But I know that they can be anywhere from the 3rd seed all the way down to the 8th seed. And that's the same thing for all of these teams that I'm about to say. The Nuggets are at 47 and 32. They've lost 4 games in a row to keep this race close. Then, meanwhile, on the flip side of things, you have the Clippers, who have won 4 games in a row. They're 8 and 2 in their last 10 to close the gap in the play-in bracket. They are now at the 5 seed at 46 and 32, but they're not alone with that record. The Warriors, the Timberwolves, and the Grizzlies, all the way down to the 8 seed, have that exact same record of 46 and 32 heading into the final week of the season. The Warriors, 7 and 3 in their last 10, very, very hot with Jimmy Butler healthy and on the floor for them. And then you have the Timberwolves, who have won 5 in a row. So they've been kind of catching on fire very, very late in the season. And then you have the Grizzlies, who have kind of the Grizzlies and the Nuggets, their fall offs at the end of the season have been the reason why this race is super, super close. The Grizzlies are 3 and 7 in their last 10, just like the Nuggets are. The Grizzlies have won 2 in a row, though. But it is interesting to note that obviously in the past, first of all, I should say, 46 and 32 is an insane record for a team that's not even going to be in the playoffs automatically. These teams are going to be in the play-in bracket. Meanwhile, every team in the East has a losing record that's in the play-in bracket currently. If you had a 46 and 32 record in the East, you would be the 5 seed, 1 game behind the Indiana Pacers for the 4 seed. And of course, these teams are all a half game back of the Nuggets for the 4 seed in the West. But of course, two of those teams are going to end up in the play-in bracket no matter what. And that's just kind of an interesting thing to talk about. It's probably the deepest the West Coast or the Western Conference, excuse me, has been in a while. I mean, there have been years where, you know, you had to get to pretty much 45, 46-ish wins to make the playoffs back when it was just the top 8 teams. But I'm not sure I've ever seen a year where there's been where 47 or 48 games would still miss that cutoff as that is possible this year. Then you have the Kings at 39 and 40, and the Mavs at 38 and 41, and finally the Suns at 35 and 43. Those are the 3 teams fighting for the final 3 spots. but or final two spots, excuse me. But the Suns have lost six games in a row, so they're now multiple games back. I think they are 3.5 games back. 3.5 games back of the Kings, and 2.5 behind the Mavericks, with of course only 4 games to play for the Suns, 3 to play for the Kings, and 3 to play for the Mavericks. So the Suns' playoff chances hanging on by a thread with those 6 losses in a row. Just a crazy way to end the season. Just 6 losses in a row is just brutal. And then meanwhile, of course, you're going to have the Kings and the Mavericks very likely playing each other for that 9-10 game. And then eventually the winner of that game would take on the loser of what is currently Timberwolves Grizzlies, but could be any number of teams in that battle. And then that means, of course, the Blazers have been officially eliminated. The Spurs, the Pelicans, and the Jazz were already eliminated, but it's going to be a crazy final week of the regular season in the NBA and should lead into a very intriguing playoffs.
Okay, well, that wraps our look back at the NBA for this podcast. It also wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. And as Patrick has indicated previously, it also wraps up our regularly scheduled podcasts. Before we sign off, obviously we will be having as Patrick's indicated, periodic podcasts when warranted. I want to just express my thanks to Patrick for including me in this over the last several years. For subbing in for me when I wasn't available due to other commitments, for putting up with me, but it's really been super enjoyable. And Patrick, just thank you for letting your dad be a part of your passion. And I also want to say that I think that this is, when we look back on this is going to be, I know this is going to be the start of great things in terms of whatever your career is. And I want to say thank you to everybody for listening.